This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Ira Gershwin was born 100 years ago today. On this archive edition, we join in the celebration of his life and lyrics. He wrote some of his greatest songs with his brother George, like "S'Wonderful," "Nice Work If You Can Get It," "A Foggy Day," "Love Walked In," "Love Is Here to Stay," "I Got Rhythm," "Fascinating Rhythm," and "Lady Be Good." After George's death in 1937, Ira went on to collaborate with other great composers. He worked with Harold Arlen on the musical A Star Is Born, with Jerome Kern on Cover Girl, and with Kurt Vile on Lady in the Dark. Ira Gershwin died in 1983 at the age of 86. Music theater historian Robert Kimball is the artistic advisor for the Ira Gershwin estate. We'll hear an interview we recorded in 1994 when Kimball edited a book of Ira Gershwin's complete lyrics, including the lyrics to many previously unpublished songs. Fred Astaire introduced many of Gershwin's early songs. Let's get started with Astaire singing "S'Wonderful."
S'Wonderful. It's marvelous that you should care for me. Oh, it's awful nice, it's paradise. It's what I love to see. You've made my life so glamorous. You can't blame me for feeling amorous. Oh, it's wonderful, it's marvelous that you should care for me.
Robert Kimball, welcome to Fresh Air.
How well did you know Ira Gershwin, and how did you get to know him?
I knew Ira really quite well. I started working with him in 1972 when my friend and partner, Alfred Simon, who had been rehearsal pianist in Of the I Sing in 31, and I asked him if we could do a book about himself and his brother. And we went out to spend some time with him. We spent many days in the house. And the first day I met him, he took me aside and asked me very, well, I would describe it as somewhat haltingly but insistently, to make the book entirely about his brother George and not about himself. He saw himself to a certain degree as the custodian of George's legacy. Now, when I worked with him, he would come downstairs to his pool room, billiard room, office about noon, and he would say to us, "Boys, am I disturbing you?" And, of course, we were so happy to see him. And he would reminisce a lot because he knew we loved the old stories, and we would ask him questions. And on many wonderful occasions, he would ask Al Simon, who was a superb pianist and who knew, as I say, a lot of Gershwin work, if Al remembered particular songs. And one day he felt particularly lively and asked Al if he would mind playing through the score of Of the I Sing. And so we went up to their living room, and at George Gershwin's own piano, Ira Gershwin sat, cigar in his hand, with his eyes closed, and Al began with the overture, and Ira sang the entire score all the way through, and it was certainly one of the most memorable experiences of my life, hearing Ira sing the wonderful, wonderful songs that he and George had written, and it made us all very happy.
I'd like to go back to 1917, to the very first published lyric written by Ira Gershwin, and you reprint this lyric in your new book. And this lyric was actually a parody, a satire. The song was called "You May Throw All the Rice You Desire." I'm just going to read a little bit of the verse, because Gershwin wrote this apparently as a spoof, and it's I think, a pretty funny spoof of a type of turn-of-the-century song. "The ceremony was over, and all was happy and gay. The blushing bride and her lover to the steps did wend their way. Their young friends them had proceeded, and had formed a merry plot, although the older folks pleaded, the younger folks heeded them not." And so on and so on. And then it goes to the refrain, "You may throw all the rice you desired, but please, friends, throw no shoes, for 'twill surely arouse my ire if you cause my wife one bruise." What I find particularly amusing about this spoof is that Gershwin became so wonderful about, you know, with using colloquial lines and slang and writing lyrics the way people spoke. It's great that his first published lyric was a parody of lyrics written in the way people didn't speak, written in a stilted prose.
Terry, that's a very interesting point that you made. And indeed, if we think of Ira Gershwin's contributions as a lyricist, it's so much his ability to take cliches, shop-worn phrases, and the way, as you say, people actually spoke to one another in ordinary situations, and to somehow bring those into lyrics and to mate them with this incredible music of George's to give them timeless expression. And George just loved the way Ira did that, and that he really responded very beautifully to it. He could almost anticipate some of Ira's ideas, and he would come up with playful thoughts of his own to give Ira to set. And I think that's one of Ira's great contributions to lyric writing, is that it made it less formal. It had a kind of formal sort of idea that you're telling a story, a long verse in the old days, and then a very short refrain that was repeated. And the story, of course, was very much in the verse. And Ira worked to loosen things up a bit and to make them go easier for people who would sing them as well.
I think maybe one of his most famous songs that uses colloquial speech is Swonderful.
Well, there, by eliminating the it's and bringing the S and the W together, sort of a device that he had used earlier in a song called Sunny Disposition, where he shortened the words Sunny Disposition to Sunny Disposition, all the rhymes that occur. Again, it by making it Swonderful, you get the feeling of the ecstasy without the formality of saying, gee, it's wonderful, which is fine, but not like Swonderful.
Ira Gershwin had wonderfully clever rhymes, but on the other hand, he was capable of abandoning conventional rhymes, which he did on one of his most famous songs, I Got Rhythm. You want to tell the story about why he didn't use a rhyme on that?
Well, he had a number of thoughts about that. He found that the phrases were very short, and he thought that to try to rhyme it just didn't work. It just, the song didn't work, and he had things like roly-poly rhyming with ravioli and some of the dummy lyrics that he put together in a search to find the song, and he just finally came up with a pattern that tended to work better by not having these kinds of repetitions, so that each phrase had a distinctive quality on its own. And certainly when Ethel Merman sang it, which was in her Broadway debut in 1930, and you had this fabulous pit band that included Glenn Miller and Benny Goodman and other greats, later, of course, great band leaders in the pit, it was one of the most exciting numbers in the history of the American musical theater.
Yeah, you said that he had written a dummy lyric just to try different rhyme schemes to see how they worked. And so the dummy lyric is just to try out certain rhyme schemes. And do you want to quote the dummy lyric that he had come up with, which convinced him that this kind of rhyme scheme wasn't going to work in the song?
If you can imagine the tune, we all know the tune, so it's sort of hard to forget the tune of I Got Rhythm, but it went roly-poly, eating solely, ravioli, better watch your diet or bust. Lunch or dinner? You're a sinner. Please get thinner. Losing all that fat is a must. That didn't somehow work as a song, but it gave him the idea of the kind of thing he was trying for. Short words, and each phrase had to be really complete in itself. You know, I got rhythm, I got music. You know, who could ask for anything more, which is certainly one of the most famous lines in all of his songs. Who could ask for anything more?
You've brought a record with you of George Gershwin performing the song that he collaborated on with his brother. Would you introduce the record for us?
I'd be happy to, Terry. In 1934, when George had begun work on the opera Porgy and Bess, he really needed income. So he went on the radio, and he had a radio show which was sponsored by Phenamint, the laxative, for which he was teased constantly by many people, and later said, well, if there hadn't been Phenamint, there would have been no Porgy and Bess. But on the show, he would play his own music and introduce his songs as well as music of others. And we have a few acetates that survived that Ira Gershwin had, and one of them has a marvelous performance prefaced with an introduction. We hear George Gershwin speaking, mentioning the song I Got Rhythm, mentioning his brother Ira. We hear an incredible, inventive performance, which undoubtedly he did on the spur of the moment during the performance because he could do that so well and that song was so close to him. So from 1934, we hear George Gershwin playing I Got Rhythm.
But right now, I want to play for you a composition of mine that brings up the pleasantest memories. It's I Got Rhythm from a show called Girl Crazy. Maybe you saw it a few seasons ago. Again, I had the pleasure of working with my brother Ira, who supplied the lyrics. Anyway, let's try it.
Too bad George didn't sing and couldn't sing his brother's lyric.
Well, he did sing at times when he and Ira were trying to put things together, and Todd Duncan said laughingly when he heard them audition songs from Porgy and Bess for him that they had the god-awfulest voices he'd ever heard, the two of them. But he said at the same time that it was so incredible and so real to hear how they presented their songs. And Ira did, of course, from time to time, demo his own work. And we have, obviously, some examples of that where he worked with Harold Arlen and Burton Lane, Kurt Weill, and others, and making some recordings of songs for movies particularly, and some for shows as well, that would help the performers and the arrangers have a sense of the material.
Well, why don't we listen to Ira Gershwin singing one of his own songs and see what kind of voice he has. And you've brought something with you.
Yes.
That he, with Ira Gershwin singing Harold Arlen at the piano, a song
yes,
that they wrote together.
This is a song written in 1936 for Fred Astaire for Shall We Dance, and it's called Hi Ho. And it had a very specific idea that Fred would kind of walk through the street seeing this girl on a poster and would then respond to it. The scene was never shot, and the song was never, obviously, in the film. And over 30 years later, a number of friends of Ira's had said that really it should get published. It was such a wonderful song. But he occasionally would do it at parties, and I think this is from a party performance that Harold Arlen, a great composer and performer in his own right, is at the piano, and we hear Ira Gershwin singing Hi Ho, a 1936 song written for Fred Astaire.
At last it seems I found her. Now I won't be happy till my arms are around her. Hi Ho. Oh, hi. If a kiss she'd only throw me, oh my. Her charm, her smile so sweet and dimply, I want them or I'll simply die.
Ira Gershwin singing his lyric. The melody was written by George Gershwin. Harold Arlen is at the piano. Well, you wouldn't say Ira Gershwin has a great voice, but he sings with gusto and can certainly put his lyric across.
Terry, this song actually was, I think, the first song that George and Ira wrote during the last year of George's life. When they arrived in Hollywood, I think they were still at one of the hotels before they found the house on Roxbury where they lived. And 11 months was all that George Gershwin had left. And if we think about what they wrote during that 11-month period, you know, Slap That Bass, I've Got Beginner's Luck, They All Laughed, Let's Call the Whole Thing Off, They Can't Take That Away From Me, I Can't Be Bothered Now, Stiff Upper Lip, Things Are Looking Up, A Foggy Day, and then the last, even to the very end, George's last song, after Love Walked In and others, he then, without completing the verse, his last song was Love Is Here to Stay. All those were written in less than a year, and they are among the greatest songs written in this century by any writers.
Since we just heard Arlen accompanying Ira Gershwin, why don't we talk about a song that Arlen wrote with Ira Gershwin? And I'm thinking of The Man That Got Away.
Well, I think we should say that, certainly to let people know that when George died, it took a long time for Ira to get back to work. And it was listening to some recordings that Fred Astaire made of their songs that made him believe that maybe he should try again. And then during the rest of his years, he worked with a number of great writers, including Jerome Kern, with whom he wrote Long Ago and Far Away, a great standard. And he wrote film scores with Harold Arlen, and one of the songs from Star is Born is one of the greatest songs that Judy Garland ever sang, of course, The Man That Got Away. And it is a fabulous song, and I probably should say nothing more. We should hear it.
Why don't we hear Harold Arlen singing The Man That Got Away?
The night is bitter. The stars have lost their glitter. The winds grow colder. And suddenly you're older, and all because of the man that got away. No more his eager call. The writing's on the wall. The dreams you dream have all gone astray.
That's Harold Arlen singing a wonderful song with music by Arlen and a lyric by Ira Gershwin. It's so Ira Gershwin that he explains why the lyric became The Man That Got Away, as opposed to the more grammatically correct The Man Who Got Away. Do you want to explain his explanation for it?
The Man That Got Away is, of course, an interesting title, and people always wanted to sing it The Man Who Got Away, but Ira didn't like that, and he said that the title had come as a paraphrase of something that he had heard and is often used, fisherman's, you should have seen the one that got away. That meaning it's somewhat larger in scope, wasn't just a person, it was a whole world that left, not just an individual who departed from one's life.
My guest is Robert Kimball, artistic advisor for the Ira Gershwin Estate and editor of the book of Gershwin's complete lyrics. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Ira Gershwin was born 100 years ago today. Let's get back to our 1994 interview with the artistic advisor of his estate, Robert Kimball. Did Ira Gershwin have a different working method when he was collaborating with his brother George than he did when he was collaborating later on with such composers as Jerome Kern and Harold Arlen, Kurt Weill?
Yes, and Ira and George were so close and had grown up together that they could speak to each other any hour, day or night. Perhaps one of them was having trouble sleeping and would then come into the other and say, let's go to work, I think I have an idea. You couldn't really do that with someone as austere as Jerome Kern or even Kurt Weill. But Ira was, according to everyone who's worked with him, the most agreeable and companionable of people. They all loved working with him. They loved to tease him. One of the things that both Harold Arlen and Burton Lane used to tell me was that the way to really get Ira's goat was to tell him they'd been given an opportunity to do a film score which required at least 5 ballads. And Ira would moan. He'd say, oh, no, not another score with ballads. I don't like writing ballads. Well, of course, he wrote some of the finest ever written, but he hated to go at it because he said it was really hard work to come up with a fresh and new approach to I Love You or I Once Loved You and You No Longer Love Me or whatever the particular theme was. And so they had fun with him about that.
You knew Ira Gershwin in the last years of his life. Was he still writing songs? Is he still listening to a lot of music? What was his life like at the end?
Well, Ira actually stopped writing in the mid-50s and really retired. He retired and then he wrote his book, Lyrics, on several occasions, which had 104 of his lyrics. This book has 730. And he was really retired. I mean, it was amazing. In their early years, George and Ira moved every few months. Ira counted that in the first 16 years of his life, they moved 28 times. That's really quite a lot of moving.
Sure is.
3 months' rent would take the Gershwin family from one part of New York to another. Ira really completely shut down in a sense. He didn't go out. And when I knew him, he rarely went beyond the backyard or the front walk for a walk. He basically found everything he needed inside with television. He could watch sports events. He could read. He could entertain his friends and people who came to see him. He could write letters to young children. The thing I think he loved doing most, aside from reminiscing and really telling stories about the old days, which he did very, very well, was to receive a letter from a child. asking a question, innocent question, well, how did you work with your brother, or what is songwriting like? He would spend days formulating an answer to a letter like that.
So you think he stayed home a lot in part in reaction to all the changing of homes that he did when he was growing up?
Oh, absolutely. I think he did. And he sort of recognized it, and he just did it that way. That was what he wanted to do. I mean, before that, he used to go to Vegas and gamble a little bit and go to the track. But he had the pool table, and his friends would come in. And then the main thing of the later years, the main social event of the later years was the poker game on Saturday night, which a number of friends participated in. But in the later years, Ira really became very reclusive. Michael Feinstein, who worked for him for 6 years as his musical secretary, would go up to Ira's bedroom, and had a little piano installed where Michael could play and sing and entertain Ira and speak with him. And increasingly just, you know, got older and stayed in his room and rarely even left his room in the last years. I'm going to talk on the phone quite a bit. And the last phone conversation that I had with him was right after the opening of the show, My One and Only. And while he had stopped writing, he was willing to make one or two word changes on a lyric for Tommy Tune. And he changed Strike Up the Band and a couple of other lyrics to help the show. And when the show opened and was a hit, he was absolutely stunned. And for the first time in his life, was receiving checks that were the kinds that his younger colleagues were receiving. He was just absolutely floored by it. And that was the very last project that he had worked on. And that was in 1982, and it opened, I think, in 83.
Robert Kimball is the artistic advisor to the Ira Gershwin Estate and editor of the book of Gershwin's complete lyrics. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.